Our fourth case for oral argument this morning is Allison versus Conglomerate Gas, cause number 213-205-CV. If the clerk will announce who's arguing, please. All right, Mr. Allison.
Please, the court. Since I'm the attorney in the underlying case, I'm also the appellant. With your permission, I'm going to refer to appellant as me and I, because I tried doing it in a third party and I just didn't sound legitimate. Though I do a lot of commercial litigation, my primary practice has been complex property, divorce cases and family cases for more than 15 years. Many of the cases that all divorce lawyers deal with now have bad behavior. They have family violence, they have stalking, they have all kinds of intrusive aspects to them that divorce and family code provides some remedies. There's independent torts, there's restraining orders, there's injunctions, and ultimately that bad behavior can be considered at the time of trial, the division of the property as a just and right component as a component of a just and right division. This case is unique. And what I'd like to do is talk about the pleading that gives rise to the sanctions that is the basis of the appeal and reviewing that. But very quickly, when sanctioning a lawyer for a pleading, the court must examine the facts the lawyer knew at the time and the circumstances surrounding the pleading at the time it's filed. For sanctions on a pleading, there must be both a finding of groundless and a finding of bad faith or for an improper purpose, which in Dykes the court says those are the same thing. So there's 13 in chapter 10 that were both alleged in the motion for sanctions. Sanctions are to be based on the acts and omissions of the counsel and not the merit, not the legal merit of the claim in the pleading. So, since essentially there must be a review of what the attorney knew at the time, I'd like to review the record with you of what I knew at the time.
Yes, and counsel, I would just ask you to please stay within the record.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Absolutely. It is my absolute intent. You can understand where that's hard sometimes, but it would be my absolute intent to never make a referral to any fact that does not appear in the record.
Thank you.
In November 2008, Mindy Meeker filed divorce from Alan Meeker. That was in Judge Wells' court, family courts, and Tarrant County. In February of 2009, 11 corporate plaintiffs, all wholly owned by the Alan Meeker Family Trust, of which Alan Meeker was the chief operating officer, also sued Mindy Meeker, her mother, and her brother for allegedly entering the offices of those companies without their permission. What they also did in February, corporate plaintiffs, was that they hired a team of private investigators to follow Ms. Meeker and her children, directed by third party Ginn, to conduct surveillance on Ms. Meeker and her children. And according to the record, what Mr. Ginn testified, the purpose of the surveillance was to document her events and to inform the court of violations of a restraining order placed on Ms. Meeker in the divorce court. So the plaintiffs sued Ms. Meeker in a civil court, in a separate court, hired private investigators to follow her day and night to report to the divorce court what she's doing. Now, surveillance in a divorce, not absolutely uncommon, especially done by the parties. And like I said, family courts have a means to manage that and to impose limitations, restrictions, and restrict the conduct. Can't here. Can't. Why? They're not a party to the divorce. They're not a party. So the corporate plaintiffs admitted they were conducting surveillance on Ms. Meeker, reducing that activity to a report, and providing the report to Mr. Meeker and to his divorce counsel, Jim Lovelace. Admitted to. Why would they do that? Well, before they started that, the corporate plaintiffs had gone to Judge Wells because we had generated discovery asking for certain information from those entities. We believed that there was a community property interest. Judge Wells ruled that, one, we couldn't do discovery on the entities, any entity owned by the family trust, without an additional element of proof. It wasn't a blanket, but it was an additional element of proof. And we couldn't conduct discovery. So now the corporate plaintiffs are running surveillance on Ms. Meeker day and night, generally with three cars, oftentimes two cars, with two men in them, following her everywhere with her children and reporting what she's doing to Mr. Meeker, who's using the information in the divorce proceedings. But we can't get discovery on him, and we can't find out what's in the reports because we can't do discovery. So no discovery can be done. So evidence of the intrusion. What took place is in after the divorce was filed in 08, in early spring of 11, there was finally a hearing before Judge Wells. There had been a hearing before Judge White. It's in dispute. There was never a ruling or approval of the surveillance. It was never considered by any court until it was before Judge Wells. And what Judge Wells did after she heard testimony by Mrs. Meeker, she heard testimony by her employer, she heard testimony from the family nanny, and she heard testimony from Mr. Meeker, all regarding the consequences of what happened and the consequences to Ms. Meeker resulting from that kind of constant surveillance. They all testified to it. So those are facts that I knew. I knew what everybody had testified to in the divorce proceedings in the spring of 2011. Ultimately, Judge Wells, to the degree she could, because there was extensive testimony that Mr. Meeker really did exercise some control, she imposed an injunction on Mr. Meeker to prevent the surveillance from continuing. Now, they like to classify it that it was approved. There's no evidence in the record in any form that any family court, associate judge, or district judge approved surveillance. Only three people testified in the sanctions: myself, Mr. Ginn, and Ms. Meeker. I'm the only one other than Ms. Meeker who had personal knowledge of the proceedings that went on. Mr. Ginn never attended any of them, so I'm the only one that testified. And it was my testimony that no time did any court, and it's my belief today that no family court would approve corporate entities in another suit from conducting surveillance to impose and police her restraining order. It wouldn't happen. It's what corporate plaintiffs alleged did.
Let me ask this one question. I think you've said the answer, but you said that Judge Wells granted the temporary injunction at that hearing.
Can I frame that?
Sure.
What was actually being argued was that Mr. Meeker made a what I would say made a final run for custody. The property involving the property in the divorce still had a lot of complexities to it, and it was not going to a final trial. But I believe, and this is my belief, that Mr. Meeker he thought he had enough evidence to bring it to a head, and so there was a big push that ultimately went to Judge Wells And she conducted hearings over, if I recall, 3 days. It may have been four, over a three-month period, where Mr. Meeker was trying to get custody of the children. That was denied, but what resulted also from all the testimony was that the judge made a number of rulings, which included denying Mr. Meeker's attempt to get the kids and imposing an injunction on him to stop the surveillance. Because the court believed, to some degree, that Mr. Meeker could stop it, even though he claimed it was all conducted by the trustee of the trust, who never testified, never appeared, and never reported anything. But what was provided, mainly through Mr. Meeker, was that the reports were coming to him, and Mr. Ginn testified in the sanctions hearing, the reports they generated over a one-year period were sent to Mr. Lovelace, Mr. Warren, who was the attorney for the corporations, and to Mr. Meeker. That's where the reports went. And ultimately, that evidence was attempted to be used in the hearings before Judge Wells in an attempt to get custody of the children, which didn't work. After that hearing, the case went to final disposition in June of 2011. When the case ended, in a bizarre way, it ended ultimately by a settlement. In that settlement, Mr. Meeker testified that he would instruct, or he would attempt to get the corporate plaintiffs to release the claims against Ms. Meeker for purposes of the settlement in the divorce. I wasn't there at that time. I no longer represented Ms. Meeker in the divorce. Ms. Nunley had taken it over, who was my co-counsel at the beginning of the case. But we had the record, and the record of the prove-up in the divorce was in there. At the time complaint of pleading was filed, it was 31 days out from a trial setting in this case. So it's a 31-day trial. There's no scheduling order. So the Texas Rules of Civil Procedure apply. Counterclaims have to be filed no less than 30 days. So that was the deadline. What's interesting is that appellee argues that if Ms. Meeker thought that there was a release, why didn't she force it? She couldn't. She didn't have any power over it. They had to release the claims because Mr. Meeker was only an employee of the corporate plaintiffs. So the corporate plaintiffs never dropped their claims. So on the last day, she could file a claim or lose it, she filed the counterclaims and the cross-claim against Mr. Ginn. Bad faith. Purpose of delay. Soon after the counterclaims were filed, an agreed continuance was done. Agreed. It was drafted by Mr. Warren. It was submitted by Mr. Warren. And the order was acquired by Mr. Warren's office. It was agreed.
And so that's in this case?
In this case. Sanctions arise out of this case. No sanctioning conduct in the other one. After the counterclaims were filed, after the case was continued, there was ultimately another hearing, and Ms. Meeker terminated me in that hearing, and I left. And after I left, docket sheet shows that the court entered a motion or granted a summary judgment, wiped out all Ms. Meeker's claims, continued the case again, and then reset it. Record also shows I wasn't there. I wasn't a part of any of this. I was withdrawn. Record also indicates that when that final hearing came up, Ms. Meeker once again attempted to delay the hearing, and she did so by claiming that the affidavit that had been attached in response to the original summary judgment motion, she'd not signed it, but falsified it. So corporate plaintiffs, even though they'd had one motion for sanctions already denied, which is in the docket sheet, which, again, I didn't know about. Corporate plaintiffs thought that was a trustworthy enough statement. They amended the motion, brought the sanctions against me. In June of 2012 is when I learned of this, when I learned of her statement, because it's in the motion for sanctions. So I'm compelled then to go and defend myself, and that's what we do. Out of the 4 days that this sanctions hearing was conducted, two of them were spent with Ms. Meeker on the stand proving every allegation in the affidavit was true and accurate, and the signature on it was hers. Five minutes for rebuttal, correct?
Correct.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Allison. Sharon Fulcom, correct?
Okay. Fulcom, yes, ma'am. May it please the court. To give the court a little bit of flavor of how we got here, this case, the civil case, was filed after Mr. Allison's client, Mindy Meeker, broke into my client's offices, stole documents, and installed spyware on their computer system. Immediately thereafter, she went to Mr. Allison's office, gave him the ill-gotten documents that were repeatedly requested to be returned by my client's attorneys, the offices of Kelly Hart. Mr. Allison refused, and so this suit was filed. That's the genesis of the civil suit.
And when allegedly during this entire time did this break-in occur?
The break-in occurred prior to the divorce being filed by Ms. Meeker. And she had, it's not disputed that she was the mastermind behind the break-in and was wanting documentation to assist her in the divorce proceeding. This court should affirm the trial court's issuance of sanctions for three reasons. First of all, Mr. Allison failed to challenge any specific findings of fact, and so those are binding on this court. Second, the facts and the law support the court's conclusions that Mr. Allison filed a groundless invasion of privacy claim and that he did so for an improper purpose. And third, Mr. Allison made multiple misrepresentations to the court and appellees that a document was an affidavit when it was not. Now first, the trial court's findings of fact are binding on this court because Mr. Allison failed to challenge them specifically. This court held in Branson v. Standard Hardware that a point of error that is not specifically citing a finding of fact is an unchallenged finding of fact, and it's binding on the court. Here, appellant complains generally that the award of sanctions was not supported by the evidence, but he doesn't point to specific findings of fact. Second, the facts and the law support the findings that were made by Judge Birdwell in the trial court. In reversing a ruling for factual insufficiency, this court must find essentially that there was no more than a mere scintilla of evidence to support those findings of fact. The court can see from its review of the record that that is just not the case here. And Mr. Allison doesn't point to any argument or evidence that would support that finding by this court. The invasion of privacy claim requires proving an element that the invasion was an intentional intrusion, physical or otherwise. Texas law is well settled that no one has an expectation of privacy with respect to what can be seen from a public place. The facts that were developed in the lawsuit establish that all of the surveillance that occurred of Ms. Meeker occurred from either public places or private places where Mr. Ginn or his employees had a right to be. To support that finding that was made by the trial court, there's Mr. Ginn's testimony. He testified we were in public places or we were in places where we had a right to be. In addition, in the purported affidavit, which was the only basic evidence in support of Ms. Meeker's opposition to the summary judgment, she never alleges that the surveillance was somehow a trespass or a physical invasion onto her property. And Mr. Allison knew these facts. He knew them because he was her attorney in the divorce proceeding, and he was her attorney in this proceeding. He was aware that the surveillance was being conducted in accordance with rules that govern private investigators in a very professional way. And as Mr. Allison acknowledges, this is fairly common or not uncommon practice in the family courts. There is also legal and factual support for the court's finding that the invasion of privacy claim was filed for an improper purpose. This case, and Mr. Allison touched on it briefly, but this case came after the divorce proceeding, and this specific counterclaim for invasion of privacy was the claim that brought this surveillance issue into this case. That was not the genesis of the case. That was brought in by Mr. Allison and Ms. Smeeker. That was done so after the divorce court had, that case had settled, and after there was a release of claims by the parties. Now, Mr. Allison just conceded that Ms. Meeker lacked power. Well, to get her back in power, what happened? She filed a counterclaim for invasion of privacy, a counterclaim that was groundless. There is evidence to support the timing was important, and that Judge Birdwell determined that this counterclaim was filed for an improper purpose and or to delay the proceedings. It was also done so 1 month before the second trial setting. It was done so 5 months after discovery closed. And yes, the parties agreed to a continuance because my clients had no information about this counterclaim that had just been filed.
You made a point that this counterclaim was filed after the release of the original claims in this case, but those were never actually, that release never actually took place, did it?
You're right. You're right, Your Honor. There was an issue about this. There was a mutual release of claims that was in the settlement agreement in the family law case. There was some, I don't know that this is in the record, but there was some confusion as to what effect that had on the civil case. Trial was coming up in the civil matter, and no release was possible after the counterclaim was filed. But then, later, the appellant took the position that the claims had been released. So he clearly filed this lawsuit to gain leverage, to delay trial, and there was factual support for Judge Birdwell's finding of that fact. Now, in addition, there was factual and legal support for the award of sanctions for filing the false affidavit. Texas law is clear that sanctions are appropriate for filing false affidavits. Texas law is also clear that lawyers have a duty to supervise non-lawyers, and they also have a duty to remedy any problems that they discover. None of that was done here. Mr. Allison, there is circumstantial evidence in the record that supports Judge Birdwell's finding that Mr. Allison had knowledge that the affidavit was not done properly. It was faxed to Ms. Meeker, and that very same day filed with the court with a notary. His notary had notarized it, despite the fact that he had not seen Ms. Meeker at his offices. He works in Dallas. She lives somewhere in Tarrant County. So there is evidence in the record to support the fact that Mr. Allison was aware that that had not been done properly, that it was not a true affidavit, and yet it was presented to the court. It was presented as evidence in response to the motion for summary judgment, the only evidence in Ms. Meeker's response to the summary judgment.
Is that affidavit included in the first pleading that asserts the counterclaim?
No, Your Honor.
It came at the motion for summary judgment point?
That's right. The pleading was filed in the summer. Okay. I think it was in July of 2010. And then the affidavit was in response to my client's motion for summary judgment that was in, I believe, October. And that's just off of memory. So the last issue that was raised by Mr. Allison was that the sanctions award was inappropriate, that the fees had not been segregated, but the record supports Judge Birdwell's finding that that's not the case either. The fee bills were color-coded. Great pains were taken to segregate fees among the various, the summary judgment versus the invasion of privacy versus the fabricated affidavit issue. And further, the law does not even require that fees be reasonable or necessary in support of a sanctions award, as that is a punishment. And with regard to Ginn, all of his fees were incurred defending himself against this invasion of privacy claim because he was brought in at that point in the case by Mr. Allison and Ms. Meeker. So all of his fees were appropriately given to him in that award.
Did he submit an affidavit as to the attorney fees he paid, allegedly?
Mr. Ginn did submit an affidavit, but that was not made a part of this record. So it's our argument that any challenges to that affidavit have been waived.
Was there also an award to him for lost income?
Yes, Your Honor. There was, I believe, some number of hours times his rate for lost income in defending himself in this proceeding.
I assume that would have been included in the affidavit that you say is not a part of the record.
That's right, Your Honor. And we aren't representing Mr. Ginn here, but I just wanted to make those points for the court. And if you don't have any further questions of me, I'll conclude.
Was there actual testimony by Mrs. Meeker as to the circumstances regarding the second affidavit?
Yes, Your Honor. There's quite extensive testimony in that regard.
And that's in this case as opposed to the family law case?
Yes, that's in this case because, again, that was brought into this case after the divorce case was settled. But the surveillance was being conducted in connection with the divorce proceeding. And this issue that the corporate plaintiffs were paying, and I think that, frankly, that's a red herring. I don't see why that is even important to this court's determination. But it was being paid for by the children's trust that was established for the benefit of the children. They were actually a party in the divorce proceeding because they were brought into that as well. So ultimately, the surveillance was being conducted in connection with the divorce proceeding to ensure on behalf of one of my clients, Alan Meeker, that his ex-wife was complying with the court's restraining order.
So it's your position that if there is any merit to the claim, it should have been brought in the other proceeding?
Well, it's my position that there's no merit to the claim. It shouldn't have been brought anywhere because there was no invasion of privacy.
Right, but if there was any merit, it should have been brought in the divorce proceeding.
Yes, Your Honor, and it was brought up in the divorce proceeding. And ultimately, after several motions, it was stopped by Judge Wells. And when she ordered it stopped, it was stopped. So that was the proper forum to hear that dispute, and it was heard there. And there were no allegations at that point that it was being done as an invasion of privacy under the law.
And how long was the surveillance going on before the counterclaim was filed?
It had ended. It took place for approximately a year, and it stopped, I believe, in February of 2010, and the counterclaim was filed in July, the end of July of 2010. So it had already ended. Thank you.
All right, thank you, Ms. Fulgham. Mr. Allison, rebuttal.
May it please the court. I want to clarify something, and I may have misunderstood it, but I'm going to be absolutely clear. The trust and none of the trust entities were ever a party to the divorce. They were never a party of any kind when the complaint that when the ruling that Judge Wells made for the surveillance to stop was directed to Mr. Meeker, because the court, I believe, knew that he was actually in control of it all. Nobody, not the trust, not any of the corporate entities, were ever subject to jurisdiction. Additionally, Judge Wells had already ordered or ruled that claims concerning the entities could not be brought in the divorce. She made
that. But my point is, if there was some kind of issue with the surveillance or the way it was being conducted, or there was something wrong with it, it seems like the proper venue for that would have been in the divorce proceeding.
I'm not sure. And what, without,
I mean, it seems like you're saying that she directed Mr. Meeker concerning the surveillance, but then any complaints about the surveillance wouldn't have been proper in that suit.
Wouldn't have been, because it would have been a damage claim. It would have been a damage claim that would have had to be brought as an independent tort against the corporate entities. And we couldn't do that in the divorce proceeding. It was prohibited. The only forum available to Ms. Meeker was the underlying suit. I believe it could reasonably be calculated to be a compulsory counterclaim to the corporate entities who had already sued her and her family.
On the one hand, you say David Meeker was responsible for the surveillance. And then on the other hand, you say, well, it's the corporate entities and we have to sue them in this other lawsuit. Which is it, corporate entities or Mr. Meeker?
I never had the ability to determine. I would argue that it was a shell game played by Mr. Meeker and it's Alan Meeker. At times when he wanted to be in control, he admitted control because he ultimately ended up with the reports. And so he had to explain that to Judge Wells. But to distance himself from, quote, the conduct of the surveillance, which was the subject of issues that were being considered by Judge Wells, he then said it was the corporations that were conducting the surveillance. So it's not my position. I'm reporting to you what Mr. Meeker stated, and his positions were contrary to each other.
We're going to find that in this record.
Yes, but you will find it in this record through my testimony, because when I was examined in the motion for sanctions, I was the one who was present at those hearings, and there were pleadings from the divorce that were placed in. But it's not a disputed fact in the proceedings that the corporations were conducting the surveillance and the reports were going to Mr. Meeker. That's not a disputed fact. The last thing I wanted to touch on before my time runs out is that the burden lies with the party who brought the sanctions motion. And they state that they conclusively established the facts of the case and proved that it was a groundless claim by calling Mr. Ginn to testify in the sanctions hearing. I know knowledge of Mr. Ginn's testimony prior to him testifying in the motion. Never heard him before. Didn't know any.
Well, they say that's because there was no discovery conducted after the counterclaim was filed.
Say it again.
The opposing side says that the reason you didn't know anything about his testimony was because there was no discovery conducted after the counterclaim was filed.
I don't believe I needed the discovery. One is that whether or not he was in a public place under Kramer versus Downey is irrelevant. You're not shielded from liability for the mental suffering you cause a person simply because you do it in a public place. That's absolutely a false premise that they purport to this court. Kramer versus Downey clearly states, Fifth Court of Appeals, and the facts were that a person was doing all kinds of ugly things in a public forum. The court found that it did not prevent liability. Second is, I was sanctioned for a groundless pleading, so it goes to what I knew. And what I knew was that it was a disputed fact whether or not the surveillance was conducted in the manner Mr. Ginn claimed it was. Because there was a lot of evidence that was put on in the course of the divorce proceeding that I relied on when I brought the claims. Those were facts that I could rely on because they were testified under oath. And there was photographic evidence that supported those claims. So at the time I brought the claim, Those are the facts that I knew. And I knew that it's not well-settled law. Matter of fact, the law is that for an invasion of privacy, it's a fact-driven investigation of whether it's justified or unwarranted. And so it's fact-driven. So nobody can conclude just on certain facts of what the law is. But in addition to that, it's my argument that their reliance on Webb and Vaughn are absolutely improper, because those were nuisance cases and not invasion cases. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. All right, thank you, Mr. Allison. And Ms. Fulgham, we appreciate your arguments and your extensive briefing on this matter. Your case is now submitted and you all are excused. That concludes our last argument for this morning, so we will adjourn.